I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Moving into approval of minutes. Questions or concerns about the minutes?
They look good. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as written.
All right, got first.
Oh, second.
Got first and second. Any public comment?
Nothing received in the inbox as of 2:04 p.m.
Nothing online.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Four ayes, one absent. Steve, you're up.
Good afternoon, directors. I'll see you today. For our, these are payments, checks, warrants that we've issued in July. Turning to page one, let me just go through a handful for you. Page one of six. Our first check was to American Power Systems. That's was actually charged to 2021-0975. That was an expense for our Sunset SCADA master installation project. That and other projects will be described a little bit later in Dan's report, but I just want to call that to your attention. Moving down that first page as well, about two-thirds of the way down, check number 60409, Lord Ludorf and Scalamini engineers, a payment for water loss audit validation. I'm not sure we've really had an explanation on that, so I've asked Kristen to give us a little background on that expense. Kristen, can you do that?
Good afternoon, directors. I think at some point in the past we did have a discussion about the requirements, but just to refresh your memory, in 2015, SB 555, and then legislatively amended in 1919 by AB 1414 requires all urban water users to report their water losses in their system on an annual basis. And then, as codified in California Water Code, those annual audits are also required to be validated by either a third-party validator or an internally AWWA certified validator. So the agency hired Ludorf Scalmanini to conduct the validation of our 2019 audit. We are closely approaching the October 1 deadline for our 2020 audit, and we've since been notified by DWR that we were deficient in providing the validation for the 2018 audit. So the payment that you see in your packet this month pertains to the complete services for the 2019 validation. And subsequent to that, you will see payments as we continue to proceed through the validation of our 2018 and 2020 audits.
So can you elaborate on the audit? Did we the audit ourselves? Or
we do the audit internally based on all of our production and consumption data and then supply that to DWR, but we are required to submit that audit to a certified validator. So there's a list of validators that we have to work with. There is a lengthy and expensive process to become certified as a validator. So it might be something like down the road that we contemplate looking at cost benefit. But at this point in time, the decision was made that it was most beneficial for these first few sets of validations to bring in a third party, and that's what we did with Ludorf Scalmanini.
And so roughly, what was that number on the total loss for 19? And what was the rough calculation? Just what we produced at the treatment plants minus what we delivered?
I had the reports on my desk and I came in here without them. I wasn't prepared. I'm not prepared to give you that total number. I can bring that back
for
you.
Was it a normal range? Was it a lot? How did it compare?
We were in the low 80% range. Like 84%, I believe, is the number that
I
we,
think what
in our ranking.
Is asking for is, yeah, it's a measurement of production versus actual metered consumption, and we're in the 12 to 14% loss range from the number you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Our scorecard grading for all the categories is right about 80%.
So as far as our overall score, we're in an acceptable range, but we do have certain identified segments that we have, you know, targeted internally that we are working on to improve our ranking score.
So roughly, where did that go? Those losses. What was the number one loss?
Well, it's unaccounted for. It's why we requested the board to adopt a formal water theft policy in July, right, to start managing water theft off of unmetered locations like hydrants. And then we need to implement, we'll discuss it more with the Budget Finance Committee, we'll go to the board here in a couple of months, meter calibration program, right? So aging infrastructure to determine whether or not our meters are reading as accurate as they should be, you know, plus or minus 5% type ranges.
Okay, so assuming that the meters are reading accurately, what would be like an acceptable loss or a normal loss minus that?
Single digit range. So, you know, I think rule of thumb is, if John, you can help me here, is 8% is kind of the, you know, consider best in class if you're on an 8% unaccounted for number.
So in theory, 6% of our water is being stolen.
Well, stolen
not properly.
Inaccurate meters is unaccounted for water. So we don't know as we sit here today what that breakdown looks like.
Okay.
But going through the process does help us identify those areas where we can target effort and resources towards improving data management, data collection, all of those different things that we can do to improve both our management throughout the system and reporting.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Now it's just a whole fascinating process that involved a lot of people in the agency, so that was interesting. Just a couple more checks down. 60412 was a payment to Normac. Those were backfill boxes. There are actually 20 of them, and that's an item that we will be discussing a little bit later in today's agenda, so for your background there. The next check below that, 60413, that's a new account, 54103. Just highlight that for you. We created this account just because we're starting to spend so much money on uniforms and protective clothing for employees. So we've created an account just so that we can capture those dollars and keep an eye on that.
May I elaborate there real quick? So the purpose of that is twofold. So under the labor union memorandum of understanding, there are uniform allowances, those types of things, and there's also a category which is personal protective equipment, right? So we budget in two ways, standard uniform and what's considered PPE. So we're working to classify those in the right locations. So you'll see more of that as we move forward.
So there wasn't an issue here, you're just doing this to get
to better track and manage
one place.
Okay, got it.
Thank you. Turning to the next page, we had a payment to AECOM, check number 60435, and let me go ahead and defer to Raith on this one.
Well, that's fine if you'd like to speak to me. So as I've spoken in the previous months, we still do not have a completed, what's termed a final construction report, which is submitted to FERC and DSOD at the end of the project. So AECOM is continuing as the resident design engineer to finish that work. What they've worked on so far are what they call major design changes from the original submission years ago on the project versus what was completed and signed off throughout the project cycle. So you see this expense of $3,907. We actually have a second invoice in-house for about $10,000 for continuation of that work. FERC will not formally sign off that project and approve it until they receive this construction report with all the red lines, etc., on design changes. DSOD has reviewed the preliminary report all the way back in early 2019, kind of the beginning of the pandemic era, but has reserved comments until they see FERC's comments on this final report. Expect this cost to be between $30,000 and $45,000 to get that final construction report completed. We'd like to get it done this year and get this behind us, but there's been complexities in a number of ways. Working directly with AECOM, the fact that folks are working remotely, responsiveness of FERC, et cetera, it has taken some time.
So 30 to 40,000 more to AECOM?
Total, I would expect the cost to be between $30,000 and $45,000 in total. So you're going to see, you see $3,900 here. You'll see approximately $10,000, if my memory serves me correct, Steve. I have it here somewhere on your next checks and warrants for September. So expect to see beyond that one, you know, another $30,000 or so.
So this is the first one of this billing
correct. But we've received two. I just want to point that out. Right. We're going to have the same conversation in September for a $10,000.
And how, refresh my memory, it seems so long ago. How long since this has been finished?
So in 2018, we demobilized the contractor from the location. And then you're supposed to have 90 days from time of demobilization and all this content is submitted to FERC and DSOD for review and approval. And as you can see, we're beyond the 90 days.
So as a result of being beyond that 90 days, how much more are we expending on this?
We would have still expended, I say that. I would argue that if we had completed this within 90 days post-construction, all of it would be fresh in our memory, readily available. I would contend that there's some probably excess expense here by trying to go back and regenerate, pull up that documentation to get it completed. I think I'd be remiss in not assuming that, right? So, in other words, if it's $45,000 to complete this now, it could have been maybe $35,000 at that time. It was all fresh and readily available. Resources change within organizations, et cetera.
And that was spring or fall of 2018?
Would have been fall of 2018.
So going on 3 years. 3 years
instead
of 90 days.
About 2.5 years, yes. Mm-hmm.
That's significantly more than 90 days.
Agreed.
It's almost unbelievable.
Agreed. Again.
Are you sure on that?
I'm sure.
Thank you.
Continuing just a few more checks down, I want to highlight 60439. That was a payment to the County Auditor Controller Office for our LAFCO expenses, 2021 and 2022, $16,000. Our local agency share, if it brings you any comfort, last year that payment was almost $24,000. They calculate those expenses based on our share of revenue countywide. And of course, last year's revenue was significantly less for us, so we got a decrease in those expenses. And then a little bit further down, 60447, check number 60447, just call your attention to a payment there to R&B. That's more than we usually spend, but most of those expenses were for parts that went to the Highway 162 Arbol project. So those will get assigned to the project as they were released from inventory. Moving on to page 4, there were a couple payments right at the top of page 4. Check 60504 UTC Membership Department. That's Utilities Technology Council, as Dan helped me out with earlier today. Membership, I thought that was a little pricey, $900 plus for professional membership, but actually it turns out it's more than just a professional membership. And Dan, maybe you can elaborate a little bit.
So this Utilities Technology Council is a entity that oversees SEC licenses for utilities such as our own. And then part of the membership includes what they call a frequency sentry service. So if any other agencies or entities are applying for an SEC license for a specific frequency and it matches one of ours, UTC kicks it back. So they provide that ongoing oversight of the frequencies. We have at least 14 FCC licenses for microwave, voice, and telemetry type radio systems. So This just basically protects those frequencies. And then the cost to get a new frequency is immense, you know, to get to do that sort of thing. So.
Thank you for that.
So somebody could just take your frequency and then you have to bear the burden of correcting that?
It would become, yes, somebody could actually make the application for the frequency, yes, and this entity then kicks that application back and says this is being used in this area based on this frequency study or terrain study. This other entity is currently using this frequency as their primary user, and we have primary license certification or status for all of our frequencies. And so this is just a, you might say it's an insurance where this entity is constantly overseeing the FCC frequencies. Yeah.
Interesting. Thank you, Dan. And then final highlight for us, 60517, just a little bit further down on page 4, payment for Cal ISO meter installation services. This is a middle, it's per our contract, it's a 25% payment on the total contract. There's more work to be done, and again, Dan will be sharing a little bit about that in his Power Division report, Power Division Manager's report. Those are the checks I wanted to make sure you highlighted for you. If there's any questions.
Page 506, up at the top, check number 60548. This is to the NASI Regisaurus firm. Again, we're continuing to run hot. Thought it was worth at least just mention those expenses and remind everyone. So about 15% of that expense is tied directly to the Glaze-PERS lawsuit. 17% ties to the 2021 proposed water transfer, so the efforts there. So part of that will, in theory, be recouped through that process. But then 51% all ties to North Eagle Water District litigation by both parties. Our normal run rate, where our target number should be, all normalized within the district, is about $6,000 to $8,000 a month, just to give you an idea, which would be standard, you know, water division expenses, power division expenses, board meetings, those types of things. So.
And then let me go ahead and comment to you. Make an approval, a formal approval of these expenditures in your board action. This month I'm asking for a transfer that's a little more than usual. That's because we've got this month our quarterly payment to North Yuba. That's $177,000 plus. And then we're also making our property insurance payment this month as well. Any other questions?
So maybe John can answer the question about the raw water pump rebuild, $43,000. Is what happened there, is that normal?
No, so raw water 2 was undersized after we did the improvement project. Clarifiers have to work under a certain pressure. And we had issues with the motor that was on there anyways. But the total production we get out of it was around 4 million gallons per minute. You need 3.5 million gallons per minute. Flow rate just to do a backwash on the clarifier. So it was undersized. So we actually budgeted, I think it was $125,000, to completely replace the pump and motor. And after talking to the distributors and stuff and working with their engineers, we realized we could just retrofit the existing pump and just basically buy a larger motor. So, and by us doing that, and putting on 125 horsepower motor, we're able to do a little over 10 million gallons a day of flow rate. So it's quite a significant savings by doing that, and we should have no issues with it. So
like $80,000 or so, right?
64, I think, total. So
we came in
and spent because we had still. I'm sorry, Ray. We still had to spend some money to upsize the conduits and pull in larger wires. So there was a. I think there was one of the warrant checks last month or the month before was for Chin Chin Electric for, I think, $18,000. And then we had to buy a few other components. So total cost on that budget item was, I think, right around $64,000. So.
That's right. It was $64,907. So like John explained, we budgeted at the beginning of the year $125,000. With everything that John just explained, we rebudgeted $85,000 for rebuild. came in at 64,907, complete, or 52% of the budget.
That's good stuff.
Thank
you.
All right, any other questions?
I'll make a motion. I move approval of expenditures for the month of July 2021 in the amount of $1,585,512.10 and authorize the transfer of $1.9 million from the TCB general fund to the TCB accounts payable and payroll fund for the payment of regular operating expenses.
Go first.
Second that motion.
Go second.
Who second?
Thank you. Read them by hair.
Thank you.
Public comment.
Public comment on it? No comments online?
Nothing received in the inbox as of 2:24 p.m.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Four ayes. One absent. All right, take a seat. You up first on staff reports?
Thank you. Take care of business
as well.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. So turning to tab three, first comment is on our CalPERS actuarial evaluations. Those have come through, and they're available to you, by the way, if you want to look on the website, or I'd even be happy to print them out for you. They go through the details of our pension obligations. We actually will see a slight decrease in our CalPERS retirement contribution rates starting next year, down just a little bit, but we will be paying real dollars a little bit more because of our normal payroll cost increases between COLAs and merit increases. But that's good news for us anyway, that we have a slight decrease in our rates. Our funded portion is down a little bit again. So these are, the valuation is as of June 30th, 2020. So it goes back a year. CalPERS investments came in good back then, positive, but not as positive as they anticipated, with the discount rate of 7%, came in at closer to 4.8%. And so our funded ratio is actually down a little bit. That's as of June 30, 2020 valuation. Just completed, of course, June 30, 2021 investments. Those came in significantly higher for the CalPERS system. They'll go through the evaluation process, and a year from now, you will see a new set of rates and a new set of our funded status. We have been hovering around 80% funded status with our CalPERS investments and in that portfolio, so that's acceptable. Comment that we've got Red Hawk Ranch parcels all up and running on the irrigation project there. I think you all probably are aware of that, and then payments have been coming in as well. Health insurance, mentioned that. The rates have been publicized now, published. Open enrollment for the employees will begin next month. Our maximum monthly contribution limit will actually come down a little bit, just because the HMO rates, actually, CalPERS HMO rates, have decreased slightly. The CalPERS PPO rates, preferred provider organization rates, have actually increased a little bit. So that'll be interesting to see how employees, what choices they make there. So we'll see how those are. But there are big dollars there for that, for health insurance. Final comment that I'm just pleased that we're able to get all of our employees in the finance division at least off for some time. We've got a conscientious crew on the first floor, and there have been years where they just have not been able, they've been taking time off, but not an extended time of a week or so, or or more, just because they felt responsible. But they've been able to do that this summer, so I thought that was good news. Been talking about having audit prepared available for you sooner or later, and it's been a while. We're trying to get that finished. All of the documents and schedules have been submitted and were submitted a while back, and that will be coming, we think. We should be having a final report signed off next week and in our hands there. And just as part of the narrative, again, we didn't, last month, I wanted to highlight that, as already been mentioned, there was some activity. You proposed some changes to our rules and regulations for bulk service water deliveries. So 2 months ago, 6 weeks ago, we were getting a lot of traffic. People coming down, securing water from our bulk water dispensing facility here. A lot of trucks were coming in. That, among other reasons, caused us to propose last month some changes to our rules and regulations. Jamie spearheaded that. And because of those, we were, again, 6 weeks ago, getting 10 to 20, well, 10 to 15 visits each day of folks coming in to our back water dispensing, bulk water facility, dispensing facility. You folks made the, approved those recommendations to change, and now we're down to one or two trucks. So our parking lot is just a much safer environment right now. And there are all kinds of reasons for that. That was important that we implement those regulations, so we appreciate that.
But they're still getting just as much water from somewhere.
You would assume, yeah, so they're still filtering from a hydrant somewhere.
So that's that doesn't sound like a good thing.
Well, right? It's a lot less expensive than the notice of violations from the state for serving out-of-district customers.
Yeah. I mean, I get that aspect of it, but that shows how big the problem really is. If,
yeah, the problem is, right? I mean, there were days where 30 or more coming in on certain days.
So, how big a tank?
But between, you know, modification to the rules and regs, the water theft policy, it's, you know, it's a work in progress. We will work to get, and it gets right back to your question earlier about unaccounted for water as well. We will get it tightened up. It's just going to continue to require effort.
How big a tank should they bring in?
It ranged from a 450-gallon tote to 2,600-gallon semi.
Wow. They need meters.
Mm-hmm. And some every day.
Meter.
Right. Yeah.
So Ray, that image is still burned into my brain that we saw that flatbed truck with the water tank on the back, the farm tank on the back. And by the way, to that bed, I went and measured my tanks, and I think we were wrong on that being a 2,500-gallon tank. I think that might have been a 5,000-gallon tank.
Was that right?
By the overhang on that bed of that truck, tied down with two ratchet straps.
Yeah.
So 5,000 gallons, you know, the higher math on that, about 40,000-plus pounds plus equipment on a flatbed being held down by two 3,000-pound straps.
Yep.
Going 6 miles an hour.
Huh.
So the wrong person coming around the corner at the wrong time in their lane gets a water tank in their lane on top of their car. Potentially.
Let me just take a minute on the, give you an update on financial report. My attachments, page one, gives a graph for July power generation revenue. And for the first month this year, 2021, our generation in July was higher than the average. So I'm grateful for that combination of water moving and pricing, really. And I'm sure Dan will talk about that. If you look at August, you see August is usually a good month, a big month, And it looks like August preliminary numbers will be very good for us this this year. But then after that, it's a different story. So we'll keep you posted on that. Okay. Next page, you can see we've moved off the our cumulative power generation revenue is now at least moved off the bottom of our charts, and we're moving a little bit higher than what we've had in the minimum amounts so far this year. And the Joint Facilities Operating Fund financial report, there you have a column, of course, percentage of budget. This is through July 31st, our numbers. So I've got a, that would be a 58%, 7 months out of a 12-month year. So just for comparison purposes, you can see on the top line for Joint Facilities Operating Fund, electricity sales are significantly less than what we budgeted for. Our budget was. Those numbers for the and then we have our water sales numbers, and those are still preliminary. We're still banking on what we budgeted. We'll have to see how that water transfer actually works itself out. Let me go near the bottom of page three and just to highlight for your attention there. We were budgeted payment paying off our installment purchase agreement. Principal satisfying that. We have to make that decision relatively quickly here now that we're on the latter half of the year, and I'm suspecting we probably will not make that payment at this point, but that discussion is, will need to take place here in the next week or two. Then just to draw your attention to the bottom line on our general fund financial report. So that's page nine. If you look on the right-hand columns there, budgeted, we knew we were going to have a problem, and we're trying to, we were aware of that, and we're thinking through that. Current year-to-date, and then our estimate, if we don't make some adjustments, will come out negative. So we need to address those both this year and next year as well for the general fund side of things, which of course is our water division and Slide Creek Powerhouse. Not asking for any decisions today, of course, but we do need to be looking at those, and we'll be addressing those. Any
questions for students? All right. Thank you, Steve.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Dan, your turn.
Good afternoon, directors. Okay. Everyone. Thanks for your time. So I'll take a few minutes here to share with you the board report here from Power Division for July of 21. To start with, our combined storage reported as of when I wrote this, which was the 18th, 94,000 acre feet of combined storage with, of course, Little Grass Valley and Sly Reservoirs, Sly Creek Reservoirs. And currently the storage is at 83,000 acre feet, so we've decreased by 11. The asset performance table there, we're pleased that productivity on the four units is around 16% for July. Had been 9.32%. So we're pleased to see that PG&E is dispatching the units more. So on the next page, page two, the top table there that we look at, the column available for generation, again, we see numbers there that are high. They're very close to 744 or equal to 744. That's the number of hours in the month of July. So the crew that work on these machines has done a good job of keeping the machines available for PG&E to dispatch and run them. We've seen some increase, some improvement on the generation dispatch at full output. These numbers in past months have been near zero, so at least now we're seeing an increase in those numbers.
The really good news is for the month of July that the ISO price for energy was the peak average was nearly $76 per megawatt hour, and then the off peak or the average was around 66. So this, you know, $75 is up from the past. Last month it was 50, the month before that was, you know, 30 or 40, and of course the average has been 40, so it was a significantly higher selling price for the energy, and we enjoyed an increase in the production as well. On to maintenance, the four powerhouses, of course, remain operational here, and we're in this time of the year with the current contract where the powerhouses are online. We're not taking any scheduled outages, of course, and the maintenance crew continued to work on other project assets throughout the system. They continue to do inspections of the various assets, such as spillways, gate mechanisms, roadways, and canals and ditches. Several of the crew have been doing recoding of the outbuildings and doing basically power washing inside and out of the buildings. For example, the Lost Creek existing Lost Creek Dam building, existing building, the interiors, the building station 2, 8, and SF16. So this really brightens up the buildings and makes them easier to see things inside and easier to do maintenance. There's been we've done several electrical and controls type testing as well. The recalibration of monitoring equipment at the various stations, USGS equipment. Our electricians have been testing devices, relays at the powerhouses for machine synchronization. And recently PG&E up at the Sunset Comm site has been doing some work up there. Our crew has assisted them with that work. Moving on to the page 3 on their projects. Here's just a quick summary of some of the projects here. Lost Creek Dam, mid-level valve access. Our crew are completing the metal walkways and concrete placement for safe access to the mid-level valves. Within our yard, Forbes Town Headquarters Yard, there's a couple of areas in our shops that had basically gravel in front of the building, which made it difficult to get in and out of the building and to safely move, for example, hazardous material type items. So the crew are doing driveways. They just finished the second half of one this morning. The Sunset Comm site, we have a standby generator replacement project, and so the crew there have again set concrete pads and installed a new standby generator, fuel storage tank, LPG, propane, and they've also constructed the enclosure for this generator. And it's really good news that this equipment will greatly help the robustness of the power system there at that site, which supports not only South Feather's assets, but also the folks that we lease the site to. Moving on to the energy transition projects, this is probably taking the most of my time here as we transition to the rest of this year. So we have a number of projects in various states of progress. We have a comm network project that I'm working with Art on. And so our ComTech and others are installing equipment at the various powerhouse locations, communication hardware. As Steve mentioned, the ISO meter installation project, some of our crew attended a factory acceptance test, type of verification testing at the contractor facility in Sacramento, and that was at the basis of this invoice. And so we have the field installation of these meters to take place in November of this year. And we have a SCADA replacement project, control system replacement project. And so our agency crew and contractor are working together to build and configure this replacement system. And this is then scheduled for completion in November of 21. The last item here before I talk about some of these tables here briefly here is we are recruiting currently for a hydro civil engineer. So we're seeking someone who has structural engineering experience and has experience with dam safety, is a senior level civil engineer, can function in the capacity of a FERC chief dam safety engineer, and support the agency to comply for agency compliance with various entities such as FERC, DSOD, and others, as we support dam safety with our assets. Also, the ideal candidate would assist us with developing and designing systems, writing specs, overseeing work, and so forth. So
Onto the tables here, the next sheet, which just is ongoing, shows our month-to-month, we fill us in with our storage and system flows and also powerhouse production. That's this table. The next page is hydrology, kind of a snapshot. And again, we're nearing the end of the 21 water year, which ends on September 30. And so we look forward to that being reset and hopefully receiving more precipitation in the next water year. Then the final page is our storage. The red lines show the storage on our three reservoirs. And again, the graphic does, you know, paint a pretty, you know, clear picture as to how low the storage currently is in our reservoirs. So that is the content. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Board.
Your turn.
Hello again. So we've decided to begin bringing to you just updates on what we're doing with beneficial use and regulatory compliance components of each of the categories under our permitted water rights, those being power, domestic, irrigation, and recreational uses. And because we're in California, the regulation is coming at us fast and furious in any given year, but in particular this year with the drought conditions, we're expecting to see things, you know, potentially change on a monthly basis. So with regard to power, just wanted to showcase that today, August 24th, is National Hydropower Day. We feel that it's always beneficial to showcase the positives of our hydropower project in our community and the safe way that we operate the project. As Dan pointed out, our maintenance crews continue to complete O&M items that many of those in Dan's list were outlined at, following FERC and DSOD inspections as compliance items. And we've also begun the annual photo documentation events that are required for submittal to FERC, and I've also started the process to field verify some of the areas that are included in our annual request for exemption from the EAP process on our low hazard dams. Of note, under our for domestic water, our monthly water user reports that are submitted to the state, we've gotten notification that due to the governor's request for the voluntary 15% reduction in consumption, the Water Board will begin the process of making comparisons of 2021 water use as compared to 2021 water use by way of those monthly urban water user conservation reports. We continue to monitor all of the local and statewide drought activity. There was a component of an update to the Board of Supervisors this morning with regard to activities that the county has overseen in the drought process. The drought task force will meet again on September 7th. And all of those, any kind of details that come of that meeting will be relayed to this board. For irrigation, canal flows remain about normal and storage at the reservoir at Miners is 675 acre feet. And for recreation, our elevation at Little Grass Valley Reservoir remains at the 5022 elevation until after Labor Day. And at this point in time, we are not certain whether or not we'll be able to deliver those flows for whitewater rafting following that Labor Day season. So just a light introduction on things that we plan on updating you with regard to reg compliance and beneficial uses of our water rights. But if there's anything that you in particular would like to see included in this component, please feel free to share that with staff. And I'll take any questions you have.
So where are we at on this reduction under the urban water use report?
There is currently, as of it, July, the governor requested a 15% voluntary reduction for urban water consumers. That was a call that went out just to ask folks to voluntarily comply with that. It's not been mandated. We have not implemented our urban water shortage contingency plan at this point in time. So State Water Board staff will begin to just basically do an assessment by comparing reports that are submitted to the state on a monthly basis. They'll begin comparing month over month 2020 versus 2021 reports to make a determination if any of that is in fact occurring. I would assume Dustin can weigh in here that at some point in time that will shift from a mandatory to or a voluntary to a mandatory reduction call from the governor. So,
and in this series of calls for voluntary reductions, this is the first one as of this July. Mm-hmm.
Under this current drought proclamation. Yes.
And where does that go? What's the ultimate threat if the voluntaries aren't reached? Of course, they say that the mandatory, but what happens then? What's
well,
the process?
I would hope they wouldn't redo what they did in 14 and 15, which for this agency was a 36% reduction.
Which we didn't even reduce anything.
It was as it is today, it was totally unnecessary. Because you have, you know, four times the amount of water in storage than you would use consumptively in a year. So it's not necessary here. And in it was either 14 or 15, we received a notice of noncompliance, and we responded to that promptly and advised of our unique local supplies and our condition that, in effect, this agency is drought-proof. And the Water Board, to their credit, said, okay, you're off our list of violators.
Okay. So that's been the end of it since that time?
That was the response in 14 and 15. The indications are that, you know, if this drought looks like it's continuing in October, November, December time period, I would expect the state at that time to impose some kind of mandatory. It will be different. This is just total speculation on my part, but since the last drought, the state has mandated very specific drought tiers, and you can speak to this better than I can, but there's 1 through 5 or stage 1 through 6, something like that. So I expect that the state will say, the mandate will be go to stage 3 or go to stage 4, or whatever the case may be, which are all uniform, is my understanding.
They are, but we had some latitude in how we applied those locally. So our stage 3, as requested by the state, may still only be at a level where we're doing a major education campaign. So we have some criteria that we have to cover, but how we respond to that locally is defined in our urban water management plan and water shortage contingency plan.
So Dustin, you see us being given the same leniency as last time?
I would hope so. You also, again, just the uniqueness of this agency, you have an irrigation raw water system, and then you have a treated water system. These conservation mandates, at least to date, have always been focused on a treated water system, which your raw water consumption is so much more than your treated water consumption. So literally, you could cut your irrigation season short one day and conserve the 15%. I'm making that up, but I'm assuming it's a matter of one day or around there. It would be pretty easy on the raw water side to conserve 15% of your treated water deliveries over a year.
But there's no precedent on that tax being utilized.
Again, we talked to the State Water Board in 14 and 15 about that and said, you know, we've got two different types of customers. We've got a treated water customer, a raw water customer. We don't want to impose a heavy-handed mandate on just our treated water customers because you're giving mixed signals to then our ag customers. So we would like to say 36% reflects 1,000 acre feet, let's just say for purposes of discussion. We would like to save 1,000 acre feet, but then do that in the way that makes sense to us. And that may be a combination of cutting short the irrigation season by a day or two, and also requesting some voluntary conservation measures on our treated water customers. So those were discussions that we had in 14 and 15. And in response to this notice of violation, the Water Board didn't tell us why they dropped us from the list of violators, but I believe that it was the uniqueness of, you know, your supply, having abundant supply, and then your system being raw water, treated water, it was a combination of all those factors that the Water Board took into consideration.
That's very optimistic, Dustin. I think we just hit them on the right day with an employee that was just, you know, behaving like a state employee, and they just, you know, cut us a quick pass because it was too complicated to read. So that was a joke, by the way.
Well, not entirely. That's kind of true.
But so I was unaware of this concept that they're including raw water in that conservation.
They are not.
That's never been implied as to date.
There are not a lot of agencies in California that have dual raw water deliveries and treated water deliveries. So you're fairly unique. I mean, there are others, NID, PCWA, but there's not a whole lot of them in this state. So when you wouldn't believe when I talked to the State Water Board, they didn't understand. I started sending them maps and trying to describe it to them, and they just did not understand. But this 15% voluntary reduction is exclusive to the treated water system. Doesn't even talk about raw water deliveries.
Okay. So, do we necessarily want it to go there? I mean, I guess for us that could be beneficial. But then you pull in raw water, which has never been included. And then next thing you know, now the State Water Board's all over raw water.
The messaging, I think our messaging to the state is we would like to control our own destiny. We would like to implement our planning, our urban water management plan document to the extent it's needed. So, I don't know what it takes if we even get to stage six and we're imposing any kind of reductions, mandatory reductions, but it would take a very catastrophic drought, multi-year drought, in order for this agency to legitimately be in a shorted situation.
We have a lot of internal operations that we can manipulate before we get to a point where we would have to require any significant type of cutback from our customers.
Thank you.
Today.
Excellent.
Thank you. Hello again. For Water Division update, we'll first talk about domestic water treatment operations. So under John Shipman's leadership, you can see that through July, the Miners Ranch Treatment Plant produced 291 million gallons. So that's a slight uptick, as you might expect, as we're going through the summer months. Mm-hmm. We did have a high of 10.88, and we averaged at about 9.39, 9.4 throughout the months. We did well there. Now, Bangor Treatment Plant's production was actually slightly down. We've been reporting, higher numbers compared to the average of over the last 5 years. The Bangor treatment plant itself was just slightly down from what we've been normally producing. And then John was proud to present that the Bangor raw water pump station, as you may know, is Red Hawk Ranch, has produced up to this point 1.3 million gallons and continues to run with no issues. We had a few little calibration issues at the beginning of turn on with filters and a couple valves and things. Looks like all that's resolved and it's performing well. The irrigation season, again, as reported last month, all canals and ditches are in operation. You can see what our run rates are for flows. So the SF-14 Upper Forbestown Ditch has been running steady at around 15 CFS. However, we did receive a request. Was that today or yesterday, Dan? A request to modify the flow there.
It was actually for yesterday, 1 CFS.
Yeah, so we were asked to drop by North People Water District 1 cubic feet per second off that number, right. So we reset it to 14. So
right.
We did do that. We continue to draw WD6 at about 7 CFS, and then both SF-25, which is the Bangor Canal, as well as the Carmel Canal, are operating as planned and pretty steady compared to the previous months with the run rates. Since we last spoke, our focus within the Water Division was around the Highway 162 Arbol project, as you might expect. So when you look at the highlighted items that we worked on throughout the month, you can see it was heavily loaded for 162, which I'll talk about in a moment. That's the Caltrans road widening project. The team did clean debris at Lake Wyandotte. We performed ditch maintenance, as I previously communicated, within the four areas you see there. Continued to perform locates, backflow testing, and then we had one leak repair out off of Mission Olive.
So I'm jumping to Highway 162. I'm happy to report that we planned and executed and completed that project. It ended up taking 8 days. Originally, we were talking about 13. We chopped it down to 6. We ended up at 8 to get it complete. I've kind of highlighted there, I won't read through those, but all of the, at a high level, the activities that were performed from mobilization and demobilization on that project. Got a few pictures here. On page 2, the lower left, is a picture of the crew installing ductile steel pipe into the trench system since it had been cut and items removed and cleaned out. So we were stabbing large sections of pipe outside the ditch and then hoisting them and dropping them into place to complete tie-ins. The picture to the right shows packing material as we go through the layers of material with sand, rock, etc. Locate tape, locate wire, everything complied all the way up to the top line of asphalt. If you go to page 3, the upper left shows kind of an interesting knuckle and a tie-in. So this was a tie-in into the old legacy system, pretty close to, as you start to go down the hill on Marble Avenue. That was about a 22-degree tie-in and angle, so I thought it was interesting to see how that was built and then dropped in place and installed. The upper right picture shows, which was arguably one of the more challenging aspects of this job, is the Highway 162 crossing. There was a large steel outer sleeve pipe, and inside that was an 8-inch or 12-inch, I don't remember which, C900 pipe. So we had to cut access to get into that and then start cutting that steel pipe away. That pipe was a good quarter-inch thick. I mean, it was very intense. We used acetylene torches. We cut that through. I should note at that point real quick, every night on this project, we had a kickoff meeting here at the shop, went out to the location. Environmental Health and Safety, Jamie, was on site every night of this project to verify everything from personal protective equipment to make sure that the traffic control that we had sourced was in place and performing as expected. In this case, in this picture, hot work permits were issued and monitored with water trucks available in case, you know, we were to have any type of small flare-up or fire. So we took this project quite seriously from a staff standpoint.
I heard that you were out there every night as well.
Well, don't believe everything you hear.
And you were serving in what, like safety?
I was actually, because lack of a project engineer and the water division manager absence, I was identified as the project lead. So I had to be there every night based on project plans, interface with Caltrans inspectors or sub-inspectors, as well as traffic control, etc. So.
And we still got our work day out of you as well.
I don't know who's on top of you. Huh?
And we still got our full work day out of you as well.
Not at 8 a.m.
After you get out there.
I had only tried to go 2 days straight once and then learned that I had to sleep a little bit back then. So I don't know who's been talking to you.
That's probably unprecedented, a general manager from one of these water agencies being out on scene.
This project wasn't about me. This project was about the team. They did a fantastic job. You can see in the lower left picture some old pipe being removed. That's that steel pipe I referred to. And then in the lower right picture, we ran into some serious concrete. So believe it or not, under the asphalt, we had underlayment. This is a concrete block that had to be jackhammered and removed out, lifted out. But we ran into concrete all the way across 162, at least on the southbound lane. In some spots, it was everywhere from 6 to 12 inches of concrete, below 6 inches of asphalt. So it was quite fun, to say the least. Seriously, a big thank you to the team. They're happy to have gotten this behind us, and they did well. Quick update on property developments. We've had an increase in will serve requests for water availability and requirements to receive water. So I've highlighted a number of those. The only one that's outstanding right now is item E. So we did receive a will serve request for just under 64 acres, which is between Coakley Acres and Oakville Avenue. This is Enterprise Rancheria property. And so there's some environmental analysis that needs to be understood, and then what their long-term project plans are, because the current plans as provided show for 12 homes on 64 acres kind of bundled in one corner. That's important for South Feather because of our distribution lines on either side, either from the Coakley Acres side or from Oakville. Those are 8-inch domestic lines, and so they would not be able to serve anything beyond those 12 homes. So we need to continue to work with Enterprise, understand long-term planning, what that means for upsizing, regulator vaults, those types of things. So it's in progress. Questions or comments on those items?
Yeah, on your 162 pipeline, John?
Yeah.
Were you able to detour the traffic and keep them away from you at night?
We weren't able to detour. We did one lane closures.
One side at a time?
Right. And the first night we started with the pilot car through the sub. Ended up the pilot car was actually taking more time with delays on both sides and backing up a lot of traffic. Mm-hmm. So then on night two, we went without pilot car, and it was just either north lane closure or south lane closure. And they worked that traffic and really kept it flowing about, I think the longest waits were 3 to 5 minutes at most.
That's great.
But it kept our heads on a swivel, even though we were in the opposite lanes, as you might imagine.
Tell you what, thank you guys, working at night and down them holes you can't see like you do in the daytime. And then all that traffic and nobody got hurt and you got completed on time. That's
Jamie and I were designated flashlight holders oftentimes.
down the trenches,
The other thing that's fascinating is the traffic does not slow down. It doesn't matter what time of night it is. I was fascinated by the level of traffic through there, including logging trucks actually start rolling through empty at 12:20 a.m. And they're coming back through by 2:33 loaded, just to give you an idea of their work schedule.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and by 5 o'clock, it's just stupid silly. So we had to be off that road by 5 to 6 a.m., 6 a.m. hard stop, and you can see why. It just is absolutely obnoxious with traffic at that point. Any other questions there? Page 4, I thought I would highlight briefly a meeting that Director Wolburn and I had with three citizens. But before I did that, just kind of give you a refresher of kind of what the topic was. So it's been a year, believe it or not, but a year, last August, we had folks present to you at South Heather, those that were proponents of proposed formation of Tustin Water District, and those that were opponents. They participated, communicated, and ultimately, one group was seeking our formal support, the other group was seeking our formal opposition. You as directors, through Q&A and debate, we decided to take a neutral position. We just didn't have enough information to understand how that would impact South Feather, our ratepayers and constituents, if at all, et cetera. So we've taken a neutral position and have held that position. A couple weeks ago, there was a request that came out for President Wolburn and myself to meet with three individuals to talk about Tuscan Water District, a little bit of the proposed formation, and what was getting ready to go to the county, and then also a concept of a Butte County Water District. So we spent about an hour and a half, I would say, with that group. And the outcome was that they were to provide a draft, what they're calling a study resolution, but proposing to the county a resolution to study water districts within Butte County, et cetera. And so what I committed is if they were to have provided a draft study resolution by the time we bound these packets, that I would present that in front of you as an information item, not a business item, but at least spark that conversation of what they were looking for. As I stand here, we have not heard from that group, so I don't know the status of that draft. If and when that comes to fruition, it will be an information item, and we'll be sharing that so you understand what's taking place there between the two groups. So this is just really an update on what took place.
So as it currently appears, what's the best potential for this district, towards our district, and what's the downside for our district being a part of this?
For which one?
For either way, pro or opposed. The best two arguments for both ways in relation specifically to our unique district?
Based on the information that I've gained so far, if you look at the formation of Tuscan Water District, I would say initially there's no impact to this district. I would say long term, there's probably strategy and eyes on our surface water and the availability to somehow serve that community, which would require a broader conversation. In terms of a Butte County Water District, I would think that there's complexities with that for two reasons. One, districts like South Feather, we're not just a water purveyor. We also have a hydroelectric project, so that would have to be factored into that process. And what was my second thought on that? I had two on New County Water District. Oh, and then public versus private entities and how they would play together within that arena as a Butte County Water District. To me, if the entire county was a water district, this is just me speaking as your general manager, it should include all, not just the California special districts. It should also include private water purveyors, right? Mm-hmm. Where I think it defeats the overall goal or purpose as I would view it. But that's early on. There's a whole lot more information. We need to learn together on what both groups would be proposing and how it impacts us.
It seems like in this entire area, though, nobody has the resources that our district does.
In this county, that would be correct. We align better with, like Council Cooper's referred to, a Placer County Water Agency, a Nevada Irrigation District, those types of folks. So I would think if this was to gain traction in any way, particularly the Butte County Water District, we would want to interface and learn from our neighbors as well. Those types of things have been explored within their counties, et cetera. If so, what did you learn? If not, why? And go through it. I mean, it's a long ways from that type of topic, in my opinion. Today, the point was just to educate you that we did meet with three individuals, have that conversation, and we'll reach there.
Thank you. So I have one thing. I think there was an interesting article in the Chico ER today, kind of outlined everything. And there's also a town hall meeting, I believe, this evening at 7 o'clock.
Is that about that? What's that? It's just a town hall.
That's a town hall on one side.
Yes.
Okay. Correct.
Yeah.
It's the folks that I believe are in opposition.
Yes.
There is a water commission meeting. I think it's September 1st.
That sounds right.
Where the topic of Tuscan Water District will be discussed. There's a potential for a recommendation from the commission to the supervisors on whether to support or not support.
And with the information that I've gained over this past year, you know, my recommendation to you as a board is we continue to stay neutral until we educate ourselves.
Dustin, what's the opposition's tagline right now for this town hall meeting? What's their one-liner?
So I have not been tracking this. I don't have skin in this game. Let me be clear at the outset. What I have heard through the grapevine is that there's kind of two concerns from the opposition. One is that there will be some kind of privatization of groundwater, either through a groundwater bank or other means that will then allow for monetization of groundwater. And that's just my personal opinion. That's hard for me to envision because in Butte County we have what's known as Measure G. It prohibits, except with a permit, the exportation of groundwater outside the county. So I think there's existing legal protections that would prohibit that concern. The second concern I have heard is that this would be a very large new water district, 102,000 to 103,000 acres, but it would be a landowner voting district rather than a one person, one vote type concept that we have in this district. It's a legitimate issue. I believe the Tuscan proponents have offered to have one of the five board of directors on the proposed district be a domestic well owner representative. So they've offered that as a basically a fig leaf to these opponents. This town hall meeting, I may actually listen in. I don't have skin in the game, but it's interesting to me, the dialogue around this proposed district.
If it's of any benefit, we do have a publicly available memorandum. It's authored by Christina Buck, who's the interim director, and it's the application to form the Tuscan Water District. It's dated July 28th, so it's fresh. It's less than a month old. And that might give you a refresher, some of the background we historically talked about and some comments in there, et cetera. All the opportunity for comment, everything has been done through the LAFCO process. Now it goes to the Board of Supervisors. It's just that we didn't feel like we had enough to, vehemently support or also oppose. That's why we just kind of stayed there in the middle. If you want, we can make copies and get that to you.
Please. One more question for Dustin. So what the proponents are proposing, that if you have 1,000 acres, you effectively have 1,000 votes, and if you have 1 acre, you get 1 vote?
That's correct. It's landowner voting.
Wow, that's bold.
It's, well, that's how water districts function. And there are enough, I mean, there's hundreds of water districts throughout California, and that's how they function. That's their, it used to be, before Proposition 13, it used to be one vote per dollar assessed value. So it's changed. It's now morphed into basically one vote per acre. It's a weighted voting system.
Any other questions or comments on that topic? And then final one, staff report is River Ranch Development. So reminder, this is the planned development. These are skyline homes, so they're quick tilt-up type homes intended to be affordable housing, although I'm not sure what affordable means anymore in today's housing market. But this is at the corner of Ophir Road and Lincoln Boulevard. We are in the preparation phase. In fact, we have a meeting on Thursday with the identified contractor from the engineering firm to perform the initial water tie-in into the property, and then the contractor is going to start work on that property September 1st. For South Feather, that ends up being about 130 homes. So we will collect a little over $500,000 in system capacity fees, whether we choose to do it with the large diameter main line or the individual meters and backflows, we'll see. But it's good for South Feather, so it's added content and revenue streams and water production. So we're eager to finally get this moving. It's been a long time. Yeah, now that there's an actual contractor, a start date of September 1, we get to go out and do some initial tie-in real work.
And that's answer my question, I want to know how many homes, so 130?
Yeah.
And that would be on the east side of Lincoln?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
That area's been, I see them surveyed many years ago.
Yeah.
So it's finally coming, man. We really need it. We need a lot of homes.
We've been in conversation for over 2 years on this, and so yeah, we're finally to that point, so that's good.
That's good news.
Yeah.
That would be good for the visual appeal coming in on the 70. Mm-hmm. And definitely won't hurt.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And what's our anticipated MGD on that?
So I had worked that up at one point. It's not nearly as high as you would think. I think it's like 30,000 gallons a day. It's not huge. I think it was either 30, 32, but I had worked that up.
It's a start.
Yeah. No, it's a start for sure, but... the system capacity fees alone help us with our outstanding note, you know, at least for a portion of next year.
And tell me again, John, what do we need, more million gallons per day to reach that peak efficiency point for the plant?
4 million more?
4 million more.
If we're in the 14 to 15 million gallon per day range, we're at peak efficiency.
Exactly.
Question? Yeah, Wraith, I'm just curious, this is a pretty small map. Where's our existing infrastructure? Is this a loop system back to our...
It is not a loop system. It actually, so where you see South Feather Box on the left and two circles, that is across the street of Lincoln Boulevard. So it's on the west side of Lincoln Boulevard. So we will do a road crossing and then tie in two 10-inch mains. The one on the top, the red circle you see on the top, is a... like a common area with some like park-like setting, those types of benefits, water fountains, etc. The lower circle is what then will feed the whole system. Those two ultimately come back out, and I didn't identify it, but it comes out onto Ophir Road up at the top of the map. And it'll come out and terminate at that point as a blow-off, if you will, or for future expansion. To be clear also, if it's not, South Feather's work is just to get the distribution mains onto that property, and then their contractors will do the actual work of pipes, etc., for that line, and we would come back and install meters and backflows and do all that, and we'll inspect their work as they move along.
Do they have a general contractor?
They do.
Who is it?
You know, Dennis, I just got the email this morning. I want to say Lund. L-U-N-D. So the engineering firm is Laco, and I think the contractor's name is Lund out of Rose.
Construction is a great company in Sacramento area.
Yeah, it says out of Roseville. If I'm incorrect on that, I'll let you know. I'm sure that's what it said.
I'm familiar with them guys. Some of my friends used to work for them. They're really good.
Yeah.
You'll be pleased.
Yeah. Like I said, we'll virtually meet them on Thursday.
Good.
Move into town four.
All right, so tab 4 is an information item. It also requires some modifications. So let me first start with Director Edwards, who I thought he may be here today, but he is not. So as Director Edwards mentioned in our July meeting, he said, I plan to resign from the Board of Directors of South Feather. So I'll just read what he wrote. Director Resignation Division 4. I, James Edwards, the sitting director of Division 4, will be resigning from my position of director of Division 4 for South Feather Water and Power Agency. My last day as director will be Friday, September 24th, 2021. So I was unclear if he would be here or not today. He went on to say, my service to South Feather Water and Power Agency has been rewarding, and many great accomplishments were realized during my tenure. So his official last day is September 24th. Now, on the information item, you see I posted a notice of vacancy, but what I did not understand, and council helped me correct it, Director Edwards was just reelected this last November timeframe, so he has served a small percentage of his four-year term. Yeah. So because it's less than 50% of the term, a midterm appointment with this vacancy would only be appointed and serve until the next regular general election, which would be November of 2022, so fall of next year. Yeah. So when we go through the midterm vacancy process, we put folks in front of you that are seeking this consideration for this position. Whoever you appoint, that term would go through the 2022, and then if they want to continue, they would need to register and be on the general election and realign for those new dates.
I think when that on that general election too, that'd be a 2-year term, right? And then it'd go to 4 after that?
Correct.
Yeah.
So we'll, since the effective date of the resignation is not until September 24th, we'll put together all the documents. There will be a notice. We'll need to notify Candy Grubbs, the elections official. And we'll start the process immediately after September 24th. So this will be coming back to you within 60 days of that date.
So that's the Friday before the September board meeting.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. So we won't be able, just to be clear, we won't be taking action at the September meeting, or likely the October meeting. It will probably be November when we'll hopefully have some folks for you to consider for appointment.
If we had folks in front of the board at October's board meeting, would they have the ability to appoint at that point and swear them in, or?
I need to look. There's a minimum period.
15 days.
I think it's 15 days where it's kind of a pause, a notification period.
Oh, okay.
But there's a minimum period, then there's a 60-day period where it has to be done by, so we need to thread that window. Or thread that needle, and I just need to refresh my memory on the deadlines.
Okay.
So Wraith and I will work on that. And
be either October or November.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions or comments on that? All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Wraith. Let's move into public comments. Looks like we have one person wanting to speak, Charles Sharp.
Hi, Charles.
Can you all hear me all right?
Yes.
Story is that South Southern is a competent agency that relies
Charles.
And Mr. Perla.
Who?
Mr. Perla.
Thank you. This is Rudy Perla, Oregon House. I'm here just to thank you and let you know that the public and the customers of North Yuba Water District are watching what is happening there with great interest. As you mentioned, we have a rogue water district running our non-irrigation. So just let you know that you have a public audience cheering your actions and hoping that things will turn out successfully for the benefit of all. We need water. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all.
How do you raise your hand on a phone? Just
star 9.
Star 9 if you're on the phone. Okay.
Okay. Let's move on to tab number 5, business items. Art.
Good afternoon, directors. Again, we're going through and making our updates to the rules and regulations. This month has to do with our meter and backflow installations. Typically, and you can see on page 2, there's a modification, the proposed modifications. We have not shown just the backflow cost, and we are proposing to add that to the rules and regulations. And we are also updating the meter and backflow set installation cost, because all of these costs have increased. So you, between our delivery inventory and costs, you can see that with the backflow, we were charging $470 just for the backflow install, and a recent order, it was up to $685.
And that's including our time, or is that just materials?
Just materials.
So are we going to have to make motions every time that costs increase, or are we going to do something that allows the agency to increase costs as costs actually increase?
As it's written in the footnote, will be updated as costs change. So
as costs change, so it could go down. So
yes.
Yes.
We're hoping
so. So this will address that into eternity.
Absolutely. I believe.
That's the intent.
Okay.
We would still highlight it to you, and we'd let you know that particularly the cost goes down. We're adding this important because we need to work on economies of scale and find ways to lower parts costs.
Okay. Makes sense.
And is this typical at other agencies where they don't charge for the labor into this? Or is this just another example of South Feather going above and beyond for our voter owners to the district?
I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you that I view labor as a sunken cost. I mean, it's built into our standard operations and maintenance, right? We pay for our staff to perform a variety of things. We budget that way each year. Same holds true with a project, right? So we look at a project, we will budget the hard costs, if you will, components, leased equipment, whatever we need for a project, and then we measure total project cost, and we include labor at that point. But you don't want to double dip in your budget anyways by including that. I think it's the right thing to do. It's just part of conducting business as a sunken cost with those resources. Now, you may think differently, and I honestly have not studied like agencies to see how they manage that cost.
You know, I think this is a great way to do it. I was just curious to see if we're above and beyond in all respects.
And particularly for just the backflow device. The backflow device is installed when you've placed an irrigation or you have a different water source other than ours. We require you to put a backflow device so that water can't come back into our system. Or if the count has been off for more than 60 days, we don't know what's been happening on that site, we require a backflow device to be installed. So by adding the labor on there, it's just adding insult to injury, it's making it more difficult because we did do labor when we first started this program, and it was a large amount of money that people were trying to get their water back on. So we tried to accommodate those needs.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, you're right, Art. Everything has gone up really, really bad during this COVID.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, it's not good for everybody.
All right, so do you want to make a motion?
I move adoption of the proposed changes to the rules and regulations regarding updated costs for residential meter and backflow fees.
First, a second, John. Any comments there?
Not online.
Nothing received as of 3:29 p.m. in the inbox.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Four ayes. All right. Let's move into director's reports. Finish and start us off today?
Oh, man. Same one. Like always, during this COVID and during this virus, everybody that I know has got negative attitudes. And I know how hard it is on these people working here, but up on our vacation in Crescent City, them poor people are overwhelmed in them restaurants with everybody coming to the coast. And with good weather there, it was an extremely difficult situation for all of them, just like these people here. And it don't seem like this COVID is going to go away. And a lot of people are not wanting to get vaccinated, but that's their personal preference. We can't do nothing about it. But I just hope people get better at safety on it. And then the other part I'd like to talk about is, this is a pretty serious drought. South Feather is very fortunate to have a great company that has the water, but a lot of these other districts don't. And in the future, I'd like to see if Wraith could put water storage on our agenda and we talk about it and try and get our state and federal government to step up to the plate. It's been 50-plus years since they built Lake Orga. This is devastating. Devastating for everybody, even the salmon run. And the lake is almost empty. That's devastating for the fish. That's devastating for the recreation of this town. They could build upper water storage in this north state because we have the water. And there's no reason for the north state to be the second, what you call it, financial strapped area, and the rest of these water people south need the water, and we could step it up here and build it and make this county very wealthy. But you can't get the state or the federal people that are elected to get on board, so I think as board members and good people here, we need to put the pressure on them and make them do their jobs. So I'd like to see Ray put it on our agenda every month, see what we can do to help the state out and create more water storage. We need it bad. Who knows how long this drought's going to last. It's bad. That's all I got to say. Let's try and do the best we can.
Thank you. John? John?
I really like Dennis's ideas on that over the last 20 years, I think. Anybody that's brought that stuff up, they were always scoffed at, you know, due to the mentality of, or the lunacy mentality of unimpaired flow and that type of thinking. But I think if there's ever a time in modern history that there is potential to implement what Dennis is talking about, I think the time is now. So I think those are great ideas.
Thank you. We'll do what we can.
I don't have anything today. All right, so move in, or is there any public comment on closed session items?
No online.
Nothing in the inbox as of 3:33, and that's also consistent with public comment as well, Mr. President.
Okay.
Remind me, phone number *9 to raise your hand. Art, is that correct? *9?
*9.
Last chance, comment on closed session items?
session.
Goodbye.
During closed session, direction was given to legal counsel.
And it is 4:31.
That's a good meeting. Good? Meeting adjourned.